Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. It is a cool 51 degrees outside. I'm starting early. It's only 10 p.m. So I'm always looking for new episode titles or, subject matter. Everywhere I go, it's conversations I have with friends, things I see on the internet, things I read on the internet, thoughts I have with myself. And I just binged a few videos from the Dark Five docs. I mentioned Dark Five a lot. Dark Five is pretty official narratives of all things, but then again, they're just regurgitating really interesting subject matter. And they've started a couple other channels that are just, I guess, information that they can't deal with in their current 5-segment, 10-minute videos that they create. They've got tons of followers. It's great. But I just watched a very interesting one about UFOs in Korea during the Korean War, which actually updated a few years for me. So I struggled to keep the stick lit. No wonder. Gigantic hole down the middle. And this is a Drew Estate. Very rare. The subject of UFOs is just, I don't know about you, man, but it is the most intriguing, one of the most intriguing subjects that human beings can actually talk about. I do believe that they exist. I do believe that military vehicles have been confused for them. I do believe that plasmic energy leaking from the core of the Earth has also been confused for them. But I do think that UFOs exist. The Roswell kind, the cigar-shaped kind my grandmother saw when she was young. The disc one that my buddy's father, who was a test pilot, saw and told his son on his deathbed, I've been holding this for this moment, and he tells his son. I mean, that's how private it was and how he wanted to make sure that it was like only at the deathbed moment is he going to share this story, which is so odd. It had built up in his mind so intensely that he held it back until the week he died. And apparently, I think I've got the story right, he had the daughter leave the room. And both these individuals were grown adults. You have individuals that supposedly saw the Roswell aliens and were so freaked out about what they saw, they described them as creatures and they were terrified. A lot of deathbed confessions about meeting the aliens themselves. And, some folks are intellectually capable of recognizing them as beings. And others are convinced that they're demons or what have you, which is typically something we attach to something erroneously because of, one, our religious doctrine, and two, our fear. And it could be that they actually listen to an agenda that is very, anti-mankind, meaning, hey, we're going to harvest all you folks. It is that you're in a recipe book somewhere. But this Korean UFO episode was just fascinating, one, because I have never heard of this before. And apparently there were so many sightings that even the Korean soldiers admitted, yeah, we saw the same thing. Like, tens of people saw these things at the same exact time. Some of them interacted with them. Some of them sought permission to shoot with artillery the vehicles that were flying over the battlefield. Others shot them with their M1 rifles. Apparently the rifles are what really threw the vehicle for a loop. And there's just all kinds of speculation as to why that would be the case. Maybe they had a shield up during the first barrage and then took the shield down after the barrage occurred, and then a bullet goes, starts banging off the hole. But come on, you could shoot, anything reinforced, you could shoot with a gun. And even though it's not information that you want to allow, or an event that you want to allow to continue, right? Because what if something else comes out more formidable in terms of the armor-piercing bullets? But we know from the Roswell crash that this foil that they found all over the farmer's land could not be broken any further than it was already broken when they found it. Meaning you couldn't tear it. Someone said they did shoot it with a bullet, and it wrapped around the bullet, and then it unwrapped back to its original shape, albeit torn by some, I guess, internal explosion. But while I'm watching this, I'm thinking to myself, you know, there's one thread that is sort of a sign of the times now because we're so aware of how we're programmed. And that is sort of a catch-22 with any UFO sighting. Unless you see it yourself, unless you know the people who actually saw it, I mean, you can go track them down and interview them and you kind of judge their character. You know, you have a bunch of conversations way outside of any on-topic issue of UFOs to get the frequency of them telling the truth is the strategy. So you say, oh, well, just tell me about, you know, where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And all those ancillary questions are to get you to answer something that is obviously easy to recall, your history. It's going to be true. And so you feel the voice, you feel the tone, you feel the cadence. And then when you start to ask them more difficult questions, you look for telltale signs where they're touching their face, grabbing their earlobe, looking off, you know, getting really kind of avoidant in the interview. And then the pace at a microscopic level, you can pick it up that they're changing the way that they behave. Now, being nervous is one thing, but really starting to make up stuff is much easier to figure out, right? But here's the catch. The catch is that we have to take data from these official sources, partially because we weren't there. But two, how do you speculate on top of something? What parts of the narrative do you believe to be unequivocally true as per the communication of the eyewitnesses? And then how much do you think that the sightings have been revised? Apparently, all the U.S. soldiers that saw these vehicles all over Korea, because it was no north and south at the time, they chose, as this Dark Five episode says, they actually conceded that they were not going to report it through any official channels. All right. Sounds a little bit better if they were to get some Q clearance such that they are sworn not to, or they send their information in. We can't see it without a FOIA request, and then we're off to speculation land. But do you remember how we did the episode about ancient mindsets, where we say, okay, there's a bunch of pre-dynastic structures that were created apparently without any written language, but they were masterfully talented at building pyramids, building statues. You know the story. I mean, they're just absolutely meticulously perfect sculptures. And so they were way above the IQ required to come up with any form of iconic or phonetic language. So we were able to deduce a bunch of exciting things about what they must have been like in a possibility, you know. We don't know conclusively, of course, and we never claim such a thing. So my question is, can we do this exact same thing to the sightings that we believe to be credible? I mentioned this once before, but a long time ago, the video game creator Will Wright, who did SimCity, The Sims, Sim Ant, Sim Earth, bunch of Sims games, he ended up creating a game called Spores. And I could never shake this out of my head because I thought it was utterly ingenious what they did. The gameplay is very simple. You start off as a microscopic being and you decide how that being is going to gain its evolution. So you have the option when it becomes a multi-celled being to then start saying, okay, you're going to be a more of a land dweller eventually, so I'm going to start giving you some land appendages. But my point about mentioning that game in this particular conversation is once you get on land and you start building a village, which is the case in, I think, all the cases. I don't think you can stay in the water. UFOs would show up and roam around your world and then fly off. Those UFOs were actually the administrators of the game at EA, or Maxis, monitoring you playing the game, seeing how well you're doing. Interesting. Fictional game, but someone thought it up and put two and two together. And even though the sightings that we have reported, and even folks like the Ray, that was it, the Raylian guy, he, you know, very rarely do we get a person who claims to meet the aliens, have these detailed conversations, revealing agendas, besides channeling Nibiru for Planet X theory. We just see them and they do their thing and they fly off. So I think it's brilliant that his team came up with that methodology of stepping into a game and taking a look. So what's the low-hanging fruit notions of UFOs coming to visit? Well, let's just establish some thought process here. They're coming to us from another location. Some people choose to think about it as intergalactic travel. Others choose to think of it as interdimensional travel, meaning they're sort of here, but they choose to be seen or whatever they, for whatever reason, them maneuvering around in this particular spacecraft forces them to be revealed. In Korea, I thought it was very interesting that the miles per hour that was always estimated for these vehicles between, I guess, 50 and 53 was 1,000 miles an hour. Which, at the time, you don't have, what's his name, breaking the sound barrier, I think until like, something like, I don't even want to say. So it's not like man couldn't achieve something like that, but it was blamed on the Russians using German technology, that they had stole anti-gravity technology. But when Russia fell and we raided the KGB files, they had actually recorded seeing the same type of spacecraft during the same time, generally in the same region, because, you know, they stretch all the way over border or get very close to bordering Korea, right? But we think they're here for probably one of a few reasons is are the current narratives around what we think that they're doing. I'm going to see if we can't come up with some other possibilities. I think we pretty much cover all the bases because where narrative from sightings completes, science fiction has taken over, even the folks that, you know, fake things. Like, I don't believe the Raylian guy for a split second, even though the book he wrote about what their story was actually very interesting. It's just a story, and it's actually, once you are more versed in stories about the development of man and perhaps intervention, even from biblical intervention, you could start pawning that off on aliens and then refining it with updated concepts and updated paradigms and seem like you really got something pretty decent. So we have the observer objective. They are simply here as a scientific mission to look at another being who lives on this blue marble in space. And again, if you're a flat earther, you might think of them as the dome owners. So it'd be a little bit more like the Truman Show. I'm going to stick with Globe Earth for this particular episode. But I really don't think I'm negating anyone's belief system because we're just talking about the fact that we see these beings. Or we see their ships. And sometimes we get a chance to capture one. So they're observers. What are the other ones? The other ones are that they are here to liaison with our government of all institutions. Perhaps they're just first contact like Star Trek after 1987, and they have rules. They must engage the governments. Okay. Now what's interesting is if the governments are throwing elections, then what do they do then? Do they acknowledge the cheating or do they, because I mean cheating elections is something they've been going on forever, ever since elections were conceived. And it's always interesting. It always happens in other countries, and you can see it and believe it, but when it happens to your country, oh no, that can't be the case, right? What other narratives do we have? Well, they're here to take over Earth. They like our blue marble, and they want it. And for some reason, there's a car driving by, and it's been really loud. Now, for some reason, they don't just wipe us off the map. They're going to infiltrate us and convert us or something, because it starts to branch. It's almost like the Catholic religion, right? It starts to branch. You've got the David Icke reptile invasion theory, where they're going to either, I don't know quite how the theory works, but it's either the Sacks-Gothberg family were always lizards imitating human beings, or they were real human beings that were good up to a point and then killed off and replaced, like some sort of Body Snatchers episode. The other narratives are genetically modifying us and then terraforming the Earth such that they make the Earth breathable to their atmosphere slowly but surely, and they genetically modify us so that we can coexist with them on one planet. I mean, they really should just watch Mars Attack and put a nice helmet on. Then you have your more elaborate ones, your Planet X theories, where you have someone channeling a human being, channeling an alien from Planet X, which is a separate solar system, separate solar system that's in orbit with our solar system. There's never been any giant collisions of any kind, and they have their own sun, the Nemesis, planet Nibiru, and they somehow, in the very quick, and I mean quick, rendezvous between our two solar systems. I mean, there's a lot of space in space, according to their particular measurements, if we want to believe it. They come swinging by. They hop off their planet as soon as they get within striking range, right? And then in this flash of an instant, they genetically engineer man and turn us into slaves so they can mine, gold out of the ground, and then take it back to their world and inject it in the atmosphere because that's what they need to survive. Hey, like I've said 1,000 times on the show, don't exaggerate. Now, if you really needed gold, we can synthesize gold. We can. It's called fusion. We can do it. It's just more expensive to create it than it is its bullion value in the market. But if we needed it to survive, we could do it. Now, something occurred to me the other day as well, which is kind of related to this, which is that we dig down into the ground for gold most of the time, right? But now imagine back however many thousands of years, Earth might have been covered in gold. And this strip mining concept is what occurred. And so now all the mother lodes are down inside the Earth. So they were here for a short bit, grabbed all the, built the pyramids, built all this pre-dynastic stuff, grabbed all the gold they possibly could, and then took off. And magically took every screwdriver with them, every schematic. But maybe not. As Bob Lazar said in his recent interview with Joe Rogan, when they said, which he changed the number of spaceships, right? There were 9 spaceships before, and now he brought it down to 8, which is very interesting selective memory. I do think Bob Lazar is a complete fraud. I wish he wasn't. I have to understand, I really appreciate his creativity in this whole thing. Doesn't seem to understand ether exists. I mean, just he's a weird dude. I don't know what the deal is. But he said that the spaceships were rumored through just crosstalk. And I think he said, technically speaking, I think what he said on Joe Rogan was he had overheard someone saying that these were archaeological finds, not captured ships from outer space. But then you have Roswell. The interesting conclusion to Roswell is that the gentleman who spent time with this being before he was shipped off and we never saw him again, was that he said 2 things. 1, I concede that I am here. He was very sad about it. But 2, he said, don't worry, no one's coming after us. And that's always stuck with me. What would make that the case? It's a very interesting statement, and it's sort of a statement that if someone's making up a UFO story, it sort of would, in my, for my money, it's a statement you wouldn't make. Because it kind of kills off the whole thing. Oh, I guess that's it, huh? Yep, that's it. Okay. Well, I guess we're done. See you later, you know. But after 47, we have a ton of sightings. Of course, around 47, we have a ton of things. But that would mean that that team is sort of like a, what, a bunch of rich kids? The teasers, as Douglas Adams said. And he said, you don't know what a teaser is, do you? And he said, okay, it's when rich kids go to new planets. They find some desolate area where no one's going to... They find a soul in a desolate area where who no one's ever going to believe in. They get it out of their spaceship. They land in front of them, get out of the spaceship, run around wearing antennas on their head and going meep, making meep, meep noises. Really childish, actually. But teasers, I mean, how great is that? They're teasing the farmer or whatever. But that's sort of the Roswell thing. I mean, are they researchers completely out of the scope of their indigenous world? Are they on a one-way mission where it's like us going to Mars for the very first time and we might die, or going to the moon for the first time and we might die because we've never done it before and there's no way to practice maneuvers until you're right there? And so the astronauts that volunteer for it, no, well, you know, I might not come back, but this is the betterment of man, bah, bah, bah. Even if I die, the information will go back to planet Earth, will let them know why I died, and then they can address it in a future invention, which is why we should be putting rovers on the moon and not on Mars, which is why we all believe on this show, I shouldn't say all of you, but some of us believe that there are no rovers on Mars. It's just a picture game. My buddy's dad, who said that he saw about a 30-foot plus disc fly up to his craft, which was doing high altitude, high speed flights, he said, I couldn't maneuver my ship, his airship, away from the UFO. And he said the UFO kept just kind of getting really close to his wing and really close to the fuselage. And he said, I thought I was going to die because I thought this thing was going to, you know, weave in front of me or something. And I can't change. It's like flying in an SR-71 at Mach 3. There's no turning, you know, other than a Titanic turn that would take a really long time, or should I say Olympic. But what is the psychology of that visit to my buddy's dad? It did appear to be toying with the craft, and there have been countless pilots that have said that the ships are kind of toying with the pilots. Well, let's think about that for a split second. What does that mean? If you were watching Top Gun and you watch him buzz the air tower, right? That's one of those moves. It's one of those sort of Top Gun moves of a super nutty guy who's so good at what he does that he can do these daredevil maneuvers, blasting out windows, freaking people out. So it sort of suggests that these alien beings are sort of like us. They can joke. They can, hey, see what happens here, watch this, you know. Or the other one that's very interesting is the theory that we do have, like we have fish in the sea. We might have beings that live around the upper atmosphere of Earth, like fish live in the ocean, except they take on a shape that is very circular. If any of you saw the experiment that NASA did when they were pushing that cord out the back, trying to see if it could pick up the electromagnetic electricity from the Van Allen belts at about 350 up, which are in full effect at 1,000 miles. The cord vaporizes its connection point. It starts floating off in space, but all these little discs are flying around, and they all have a little notch out of them. So imagine a disc that's turning, but it has a notch that doesn't move. So it's either spinning at a perfect interval such that the camera, whatever frames per second it's doing, it's always turning to the point that notch is always in the same spot. Now that we know more about NASA since the first time we all saw that video, it's probably some studio anomaly of some fakery, who knows. So we have to, unfortunately, maybe deprecate that one out of our library because it's just too in NASA's camp. By the way, I saw another moving shots and some NASA promo tonight on a TV that was not in my control of the space station in orbit around Earth. And it was a very sexy shot, looked great, but who's taking the shot? This shot, I don't know. They never say. We're going to send up a photographic satellite to take pictures. I mean, who would pay for that? Again, the space shuttle is gone. SpaceX has to be as economical as possible. So when they fly up to the space station to supposedly refuel them, they give them new t-shirts and diapers. I know they don't use them, but you know what I'm saying? Drop off, pick up new people. They're not flying above the space station at any point in time because that takes force. Their job is to get there, do their duty, and then drop back down. So who's taking that shot? If you know, let me know. I mean, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but these are like probably quarter mile away shots in orbit above the space station. Well, if you want the American people to keep paying for, the international community to keep paying for it, your module that your country sponsors, then you're going to have to produce some imagery, right? The flying cigars that my grandmother saw over the plains of Kansas. And this would have been the plains of Erie, Kansas, if you want to look it up. And that's E-R-I-E, just south of my town, Chanute, C-H-A-N-U-T-E. They were just hovering there, slowly moving over the plain, with what my grandmother said was a smoke trail out the back. And what's interesting is when I was a kid, I remember without the internet, it must have been shows on TV or something, because I didn't own any books that said they were UFO books. Those cigar-shaped old shots from the 30s. I mean, my grandmother was born in 1912, so she would have been seeing this between 1912. In fact, according to her statement, I think she said she was seven. So 1919. All right. So they're just chilling out, going really, really slow. So, if they're observers, they're obviously not interacting with our government flying over the plains of Kansas, but what a great place to fly because it's not that populated. You just do some math. You say, look, we don't care if a few of them see us, but we can't have New York City seeing us. They want to be in a rural area where planes aren't scrambled to intercept them, because in 1919... And again, this is just because my grandmother saw them. It doesn't mean that's when they first arrived or the only time they've ever done it. But they seem to be observing. So we put ourselves in their shoes. What could they possibly be observing? Well, they're looking at the contour of the Earth, probably looking at our farming, how well we have advanced, what kind of food we grow. What also seems very strange to me is that the bigger ships are never claimed to have landed on the surface of the Earth. That's another interesting thing. If you can hover a cigar up in the air, it's like this little guy right here, and I'm flying across. Okay, well then you've got anti-gravity all worked out, whether it be a blimp or whatever technology you have, bringing it down altitude-wise to touch the ground so they could get out and take samples. Perhaps they're doing that at nighttime. Perhaps they're doing that when no one's looking, don't know. But come on, you would think with all the observations we have seen, these bigger craft would make a landing. There's also a cylinder that has been photographed several times and probably CG'd several times that's more metal. Don't know if it's the same one that my grandmother saw, but I will say that the photos I've seen as a young kid, she's right. It was like a cigar, like a torpedo cigar. Torpedo on both ends, tapered. Like Mr. Handy or Mr. Hanky. The littler saucer ones are always the ones that are most familiar to us in terms of landing on the ground. What I think is very interesting is you do have, at some point, the insertion of a saucer shape into the lexicon of man. And then, if someone is going to see one, or make one up, especially if they're making one up, they always pick a traditional shape in most cases. Now, in the 80s and 90s, when you have the Project Aurora, which I believe is... There's two Project Aurora sightings that I think One is perhaps U.S. military, and the other ones don't seem to have any photographic evidence. And if you know, feel free to link me to it. But you'll have the fairly man-made sized vehicle, which is a triangle with three lights on each side. Several people who said they've seen these vehicles fly. It seems there's no propulsion like a jet engine. It is an anti-gravity system. There's been a lot of radiation poisoning for folks that have seen these. One of the Men in Black experiences I told you about, I believe it was Canada, where those two dudes walk into the hotel and trying to find the guy at the hotel. I apologize if I got the location wrong. But they were trying to find him because he said he saw an aurora sighting the night before over the hotel, and it was another person that saw it as well. But there's a triangular observation that is reported every once in a while where the vehicle is like the size of a small town, like a township, like multiple miles on one side. Then there are, and that there was one of those portrayed in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which I just want to footnote. If you have not seen that movie, the original, I wouldn't watch the extended version because it's kind of messes up the end. See the original cut before you see the advanced cut, because I thought it was like explaining the Force, you know. It was like, nah, the ending is good. I won't ruin it for you. But it's a fantastic observation on coming in contact with UFOs and then communicating with them and then liaisoning with them. It's really, really well done. A little bit of suspension of disbelief, but not too much, to be honest. We then have the sort of other communication that is very interesting, in that in England, we have crop circles. The claims have been numerous. The most traditional claim, that the archetype of the story that I remember, is that someone will be seeing a vehicle in the woods. And there's even videos of this sort of thing. One of them's glowing orange, and it will fly by. It'll be flying sort of behind the woods, but some of them are right there in your face. And then it'll go over the field and then fly off. And suddenly, they claim that the crop circle was created by the vehicle. Very interesting. Now, we know human beings can create crop circles. They're just unbelievable. I mean, geometric shapes that are phenomenal. But they're supposedly, okay, I haven't personally witnessed one in my lifetime. There's a genetic difference between the ones that are claimed to be UFO created and the ones that are human created. The human ones are more brutal to the hay or the wheat or whatever field crop is actually being crushed, in that the fibers that go up out of the ground are actually broken by using wood planks with ropes and stepping on them and moving in a circle and stuff. Again, it's tremendous that man can do that. I always thought it was amazing in the Midwest when farmers would cut their crops to create an image, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs logo or whatever, you know. But the ones that are created by UFOs, supposedly, are interwoven, meaning the fibers aren't broken. They're kind of weaved like a tapestry, and they're bent over, but they're still alive. And I don't know what happens to them after they grow out. That's the other big question. So let's just say you left a crop circle alone that a human being made, and how does it age? And then you leave one alone that is supposedly a UFO created with this interweaving tapestry braided technique, and it would appear scientifically that the one created by UFO continues to live. And does it upright itself eventually? I mean, if they've all been woven together, and I've seen close-up videos of this 20 years ago, you know, on one of the UFO shows, you never know if anything on TV is real, right? You just don't know. We're learning that a lot in these last 10 years. So there's this, I don't know, I don't even know how to say this. There's a line of stories that came out of the Disclosure Project by Dr. Stephen Greer, who is a PhD physician, I think he's an ER triage physician. So he's not like a, aviation, aeronautical guy, but he's definitely a smart dude. I have a friend of mine that's talked with him for a good 4 hours, and she was utterly convinced that he was legit. I have not talked to him, so I don't know. But they found a bunch of guys that were part of the Eisenhower administration, and they told a pretty big tale that Area 51 was where the aliens were actually being kept, not right at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Perhaps they're taken in one place for debriefing, and then they're put up in the other location for safety reasons. Don't know. But they said that they were sent there to tell everyone at Area 51. There's one guy that claims this story. He was sent by Eisenhower to tell Area 51, if you don't report what you're doing to me, meaning Eisenhower, through this proxy, then I'm going to roll through your place with the Army, and we're going to find out what's going on. And then that guy says that he arrives at a hangar, which also has like an office inside of it. And he notices that there was a gray alien talking to one of the indigenous commanders of that area, of the Area 51. He had to wait till that conversation was finished, but that he sat and witnessed this conversation with an alien, and so he was completely converted for the rest of his life, like any one of us that's seen a ghost. You believe in the afterlife for the rest of your life. You don't know what it is, but you believe in it. Now, we also have sightings where UFOs come up on missile tests and disable the missiles, supposedly. There's even videos where UFOs cancel out chemtrails. I mean, there was a really convincing video. I mean, I don't know, it's easily done in special effects, of course. But this chemtrail was laid in the sky, and then these little white dots were just flying through the chemtrails, and they would disappear as if they don't like them. Well, now, let's glue the two stories together of the claim that UFOs have disabled warheads and that they're liaisoning with governments in general. The romantic story behind the whole thing is that once we crack the atom, we are at a point where we are now capable of hurting the rest of the universe. And so they step in to retard our use of these missiles. And so that's the game. But the chronology would be, according to just different sightings, different people, different stories, that they had made definite contact with these folks by 47. And that somewhere in, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, these beings would fly over volatile weapons and disable them. Okay. So how does that conversation go? Let's say you're the human race and I'm the UFO guy. I'm the alien. I come talk to you, and we're going to do business together. So we're going to do business together. Now, you know that I came to you from a very far-off location, so in terms of my technical prowess, hence my ability to F your stuff up if I don't like our conversation, it should just go without saying. Even if you shot my ship down, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We got here. You can't get to us. We can get to you. And I can make a claim that we have a trillion people on 100 different planets or 1,000 different planets, and we will just come and take what we want. So you would think that by 47, we've already popped a couple nuclear bombs in war. We're doing tons of testing all the way up to the 70s before we banned above ground testing. I mean, that Tsar bomb that Russia did, I mean, holy mackerel. They don't even know what megatons the Tsar bomb was. They estimated around 48 megatons. I mean, just think about that. Unreal. All right. So now we are continuing as the United States government, and it could be because of double-blinded layers of authority, layers of knowledge, compartmentalization. We're still building these missiles that they supposedly don't like, but they're supposedly in communication with us. So why? Why even continue to create this world dominance thing if we're sort of in cahoots with aliens? Even just the United States of America alone. could be that, you know, one of the things that I'm sure makes anyone who's not an American throw up in their mouth a little bit is that these stories come out that only America has these, you know, face-to-face communications with aliens. You know, I don't know of stories other than really kooky ones from the Nazis where they've cut and paste, you know, CG folks or animations where an alien shaking hands with Hitler or something, right? Until you find the original footage and he was shaking hands with somebody else. I don't know of any stories like Roswell in the Russian government. Russia, if nothing else, has a gigantic plot of land. As formidable as that land is and difficult it is to live on that land, that's a gigantic portion of land that they could do anything. They could do surveying, talk to people, teasers could come out, right? Meet, meet. I don't know. Inform me if you know about Russia, you know, having a similar experience. So what if just by sheer luck, America is the one that gets the Roswell crash alien? There's supposed to be three. Two of them die in the crash. One of them stays alive. And apparently, you know, that one that lived is completely unscathed. And so he starts talking to us. And, you know, if the Eisenhower story was true, then he lived at least 13 more years. You would imagine that their lifespan would be fine, except the fact that perhaps they don't breathe our atmosphere. According to the mortician's friend, who was the nurse who did part of the autopsies on the other two, their bodies are full of so much sulfur that when they cut them open, they're vomiting because of the sulfur in the air. Okay. So maybe the United States goes, we have to build these missiles because you're not in contact with the rest of the world, and the missile game is the game. Nuclear bombs are the game. We have to defend ourselves. So pardon us while we do this. But then why would there be UFOs showing up? Which then negates the story that the little alien said, no one's gonna come to rescue us. Now, it could be that no one's going to rescue us, but our friends will show up. I guess those two could go together. So they are disabling our weapons, but they're also talking to our government. Seems like a contradiction in principle. Unless you step it up to the Project Disclosure, which was like a 2000, started in the year 2000, went on, probably still going on, where the guy that was lying profusely in the press conference said that he knew of 27, I think, different alien species. That he had seen them. And just like a really good coast-to-coast AM interview, the journalist stands up from the UK and says, well, what do they look like? And the guy freezes because he just made it up on the spot. And he never thought of what they might look like. And so his answer was, they look like us. Okay, what about the grays? What about the reptilians? The classic indication that you have a hoaxer claiming to have met aliens is that only the hoaxer ever met the alien. Right? There's the famous dude who was hiking in the woods, and he said he got beamed up into the spaceship, and he's missing for a few days, then he comes back down. He was never the same. His closest friends are like, this was real, because he's really messed up, and what on earth would do that to him? Besides the traumatic experience that he recorded. I don't mean to take a dump on his story, but, you know, you're making outrageous claims, so we're going to have to keep you in that column until we can find out some evidence. The other one is the guy in Paris, who is the Raelian guy, who said that he was out frolicking in the woods, looking for a little Red Riding Hood, I guess, and he bumps into a spaceship that's landed. This exotic female, like perfect elven-type human, comes out and talks to him. He goes back in the city. He gets his camera, comes back out to meet them at a different day. I believe I have the story correct. And then a male figure joined the female figure. He supposedly took pictures, but they didn't come out, or he forgot to, or something weird. You know, like, there's no evidence that any of this occurs. Now, trust me, if any one of you were my friend and I had seen an alien who said, hey, come back to me on Tuesday at 2, we're going to work something out where you're going to see this thing. And, you know, it would be the first thing I would say to these beings. If you're even remotely intelligent, you would say, okay, here's the thing. Do me a favor. Like the little alien that told me what was in my Christmas present. He gave me a gift of knowing what was in one of my presents to help me with the thing that I inserted into the conversation, which is what I said was, no one's going to believe me. Because he said, are you okay? And I said, I guess I'm all right, but no one's going to believe me. I was in the middle of a conversation. I don't remember the beginning of it. And he pulls up the present. This is origami paper. Boom. Next day, woke up at 1200 in the afternoon, having not dreamed. I closed my eyes from looking at him and immediately opened them, and I'm lying on the bed, and it's 1200. I go out, and sure enough, something I had never seen in my life, I would have described it as a 8x11 format, was actually square, and I thought it was an album, and it actually was soft, and it was origami paper. Okay. Here's the thing. If you are an intelligent race, now we know that we can say that because of human beings, we know a lot of potential reasons why this is true. But we're always assuming that aliens are all equally smart. We know that's not the case on planet Earth. We can make these very sophisticated pieces of equipment, whether they be computational computers or weapons, and Nimrods can grab the thing and destroy the planet. It happens all the time. So it doesn't mean that every alien has the same wherewithal that built the craft, that has come up with an agenda. I'm just hoping that you're not allowed to come to a planet like Earth, do anything in our atmosphere where we can notice you, unless you have a minimum sort of true astronaut brain with directives and things like that. But if you're willing to allow people to see the ship, there's only so many decades that you would realize, sociologically speaking, that allowing them to see the ships could warm up the narrative could warm up the consciousness of man that these vehicles do exist. But what would be the algebraic truth of the logarithmic equation of that strategy? It would be less at first, more. As gradual as that little curve might be, it'd be more. And maybe there's a logistic of you know, one's got to go back and then another one comes. And so there's a dip in the wave, you know, where they're bringing in new folks. They got to go refuel, got to take a pee, go visit the wife and kids. But coming and going for 100+ years, you know, if it was the book of Ezekiel, there's a lot of things flying around the sky, chariots in the sky. I would assume they would have been visiting us for a long time. If they participated in our creation, then it's another completely different objective. They're babysitting us. The whole premise of 2001 A Space Odyssey is this monolith shows up and takes man to the next level. Interesting. For my money, the story of them trying to ease us into their existence would produce, way before now, a credible sighting of a couple different species. One, what if they were photographed? Their bodies. Now, what I think is very fascinating is, again, there was an HBO producer, a woman, who was a documentary filmmaker. And the story goes is that she was brought in, this is her claim, she was brought in by the military, showed a bunch of photo albums of spacecraft, aliens, autopsies, all kinds of good stuff. And they said, you are going to be the documentary filmmaker that breaks this story to the world. She's really excited. She goes back to HBO proper, because they're always independent folks on the outside who use HBO for distribution and money. And they're excited, and then she ends up trying to go back to her contact, and they had, I guess, about faced on the decision, and they're gone. It was like she never, ever talked to them, ever. Interesting. But what if we are searching on the web? You go to Google, you search on images, You search on UFO, real UFO, real alien bodies. And what if 10% of them are real? What if? Now, maybe you have studied this so extensively that you know when you look at every single photo out there, you've done your research, reverse searched every image to find out what group created the hoax, whether it was an art project or someone faking Bigfoot again. I don't have that knowledge. I know some of them are fake. The fake autopsies, the black and white autopsy photo, which just was, you know, once you see the frame rate of the footage, you know you're looking at some modern piece of equipment. But why wouldn't they show up and allow themselves to be photographed with 4K cell phone cameras? Why not? What's the big deal? So you have a piece of concrete evidence that they exist. I think that's the next stage. How many? And here's the thing. I forgot to finish my point. Remember I said in a few episodes back that they've calculated that by 2047, the youth of the world will have forgotten everything that occurred in 2012. Or they won't have learned what happened in 2012. All right. Well, if you do a bunch of I don't even think we're at an increased level right now. Again, media recording devices tend to get rid of conspiracies. Again, we don't have any more saviors coming from heaven. Because now, if a guy showed up and did all those things, he'd be videotaped. He'd be a viral video, wouldn't he? Okay, so cell phones show up, 4K cameras show up, and now UFO sightings are always that one person who doesn't have a cell phone. There was, the people that live outside of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, the wife filmed this flying wing thing, and the husband didn't get his camera out to film as well. He's totally content with just seeing it with his eyes. Had the two of them taken the shot simultaneously, we'd be able to probably prove that what they were seeing was legitimate. Now, supposedly someone took a 35mm shot from another angle, but honestly, the angle, we don't get two sides of this vehicle that's supposedly hovering over the base. Now, for all we know, could have been a balloon, could have been, I don't know. Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is not going to fly a covert vehicle in the middle of the day. The vehicle just vanished in a cloud, by the way. Cloud just went over it and it was gone. All right. So what would be the point of constantly giving the current generation sightings, but not increasing, at least visibly, the sightings and visits such that it's building up, it's building up. Grandma saw, you know, two cigars when she was 7 on the Kansas plains. Well, that means I should be able to see 50 years later, 3 or 4 in my lifetime. That I've never met anyone on planet Earth who firsthand saw a UFO. Always second generation, like my buddy's father. So it was 2 degrees away. Do I believe his father was telling the truth? Absolutely. Do I believe he was extremely versed in all vehicles that had been made up to that point? Absolutely. He was a test pilot. You know, other than covert foreign technology, which is such a gimpy excuse, right? Oh, that's, you know, if you're seeing a UFO in Russia, then it's a U.S. secret plane. If you see one in the United States, it's a Russian one. Yeah, I mean, it's just too easy. Too easy to blow it off. So I told you at the beginning of the episode, I think these things exist. But I'm trying to deduce, because they haven't landed in some baseball field in Washington, D.C., they haven't gotten out and let someone videotape the communication. I mean, how easy would it be to have an alien get out of a ship? You know, they could, I'm assuming, because of a story in Chile, by a guy I actually believe was telling the truth, that they had the ability to calm everyone around the crashed ship that was crashed into the side of a mountain. So they were able to calm them. So what if you just find a remote group of folks? You let them have a few sightings in the weeks prior to you landing. See how they behave. If the farmer runs out with a shotgun, then, you know, that's not a good place to hang out. But you go in upstate New York with a bunch of intellectuals and you do a little show and tell, and you land, get out of the vehicle, everyone's sedated to be positive, and you allow yourself to be videotaped shaking hands. Surely they know that's our salutation of physical meeting. Didn't happen. The Raelian guy. It was very exciting. It was a 70s story of the dude in Paris. And he tells a story that's just, I mean, he writes a whole book based on supposedly their doctrine of how the universe is put together, where man comes from. But they never come back to visit that guy one time. If you know the story better, and he says they have, then please fill me in. But it's just strange. It's just very, very strange. And one could cite space travel as being the problem of ever coming back in your lifetime. Remember E.T., the movie, was all about that covert Queens Clarence guy visiting the kid's house when they quarantined the dude's house. I forgot the kid's name. But, they wrap it in plastic and they've got, E.T. there and he's all turning into this is like a white dog turd. And then all of a sudden his heart starts beating again and they run off on the inside the basket of the bicycle. Which is just fascinating because if you look at his overall mass and all the other shots, he doesn't fit in the basket of a bicycle. It'd be like trying to stick a 3-year-old kid in one. The other thing is that Dr. Stephen Greer, he takes people out in the desert and he has them all meditate the calling of the beings down to where they are sitting and camping out. What's interesting about that for me is that I didn't realize it until I watched the latest film that he claims that he has this 100% capability since about 17 years old of sitting and meditating anywhere in the world, calling them down to him, and then he can see them. But his UFOs are always white dots in the sky. Given that we know about drone technology now that is capable of doing essentially the replacement for firework shows, right? It flies in three-dimensional cubes and can do anything. A light can travel a long way. So you put real powerful LEDs, which barely use any power, so many miles away, this dude's selling everybody a load of crap. He just has it. He's like got a little cell phone. He's got a little schedule out. We're going to be facing that way. So you're going to camp out down there. They're all on foot. And so they never get in like a Baja truck and just start hauling ass right towards where the sighting's happening, trying to catch those that are instrumenting this thing in the sky. So they want to see these and they want to believe. And so as soon as it happens, last thing they want to do is find out that daddy's Santa Claus. They don't want to find out, so they sit there. Then you have the miraculous thing in his movie where a guy that's deaf, pretty much, he's got massive hearing aids, like in terms of power. And during one of the sightings, they have an alien caught in a photograph, supposedly, and the guy can hear the next day. He also brought his buddy with him, who knows that he has this massive hearing problem. When interviewed, the guy just starts sobbing. It's very believable. I have no reason to believe he's lying. So that seems like something that needs to be investigated well beyond that. And what I find interesting about it is that if that guy truly got his hearing back because of what Stephen Greer said was a healing alien that they had seen multiple times in the past, he's always known for healing. And it's like, Stephen tries to play it off like, no big deal. Whatever. No big deal. And you're like, what are you talking about, dude? This is one of the most remarkable proofs of physical evidence of aliens. But the guy, the alien was an apparition. It wasn't really there. And it's just like, oh my gosh. You're talking about angels at this point. And then the idea is if an alien touches one human being and cures the hearing, then everyone in the camp should have gotten their healing. Someone's got ovarian cancer and they're not telling anybody and poof. Full remission, no cancer. Someone's got something else. The dude should have been going around and healing everybody, not just picking out one dude and running off. So it would seem like you could do a full documentary about the guy with the hearing. an hour, 2 hours long, building up all the physical proof that he actually had a hearing problem, going through all of his childhood photographs, talking to all of his friends, all of his coworkers, his family members, and then taking him to laboratory after laboratory to test his auditorial response. Nope, it's just this little segment, this most amazing claim in this documentary. It was very believable, let me tell you, man. One of the things I think is very interesting about thinking about their mindsets is that it would allow you, if we ever became accurate or mostly accurate with our perception of why they're coming here and what their objectives are, is that we then begin to perhaps predict their next arrival, predict what they're trying to do. If you ever made contact with them, you would engage in conversation that is right along the lines with what they are intending to do. Now, one of the most sort of, I would say, subtle, terrifying realities about this whole concept is, what if Earth is truly one of the most unique creations in the universe, in direct conflict with the space agencies, which routinely try to take a piss on the phenomenal, you know, Gaia, Earth. We're nothing. There's a bunch of us out there. And, you know, I mean, the statistics of how many inhabitable planets in the last 20 years has risen by, you know, a millionfold. When I was young, it was like, nope, there's probably just, you know, like, in a whole galaxy, there might be just, you know, 100 Earths. I'm exaggerating. But now it's like, I just read a report the other day that said, I think someone posted on Facebook, and the idea is that it was something like 1 in 4 solar systems in the galaxy would have an Earth-class planet. I mean, you're just like, what are you talking about? Do you realize if official astronomy is correct, you got to have a planet, you have to have a sun of a certain size. Could be any size sun, to be honest. But then that planet has got to be the perfect distance away from the sun, not to boil off, to allow an atmosphere to create itself. It's got to have a really strong orbit, so it's not a diminishing orbit, so it doesn't fall into the sun at an earlier pace, thus giving it time to live billions of years in space to evolve stuff. I just find it impossible, okay, one, for anyone to make such a prediction. Because the bodies around a sun cannot be calculated, even if you think you found one. And again, right now, it's one of these things of like, the Catholic Church invented a ton of things. And I'm not saying that these things I'm about to mention are bad, because I think they have therapeutic placebo effects on a sociological level, psychological level. But they made up a lot of prayers, the rosary. They made up confession. And then they not only made up confession, which is supposed to come with a monetary deposit, either before or after you go in, but it was good for people to get stuff off their chest. It sort of allowed the elders of the village, if they weren't pervs, to sort of subconsciously regulate the health of their village, right? If you know Jim Bob over there has the hots for Billy Bob's wife, then you could monitor that situation as a priest, and you could actually, just like needful things, you could suggest to people that maybe we want to watch that little area over there just in case, because we don't want these two guys going to blows, blah, blah, blah. But once the Bible was translated into English, they looked in and said, where did you come up with all this stuff? I never heard a story of what they said in return. Okay, so they had an instrument known as Latin, and all the other forms of writing, supposedly. And so they could make it up because the average citizen couldn't read and write their own name. So our space agencies have a bunch of equipment that they claim does what it does, and you don't have the capability of using it. Big disk arrays in the desert, space shuttles, satellite telemetry. You're not invited. You're paying for it, but you're not invited to have the data. until they have a chance to usurp all of the data, name everything after themselves, and then put a huge spin on it, you know, cleanse it from revealing anything that might be damning. So if you believe, for instance, there are aliens on all the planets in the solar system, minus the gas giants, so they're covering up Martians, they're covering up lunar beings, that kind of stuff. Well, you know what? Technically speaking, if they did find that stuff up there, yeah, they could do that, and you would have to be very diligent with your telescope to prove otherwise. But we know you have to build gigantic telescopes to get any better pictures than the ones that we get out of our little $10,000 telescopes. But Stephen Greer says, if you think about them, they'll come to you. All right. That gives credence to the consciousness of man / consciousness of the universe / consciousness of anything. I mean, a rock could have consciousness. We just don't know. You can't track consciousness. It's this intangible thing. So if they're fairly telepathic, then that's the way they communicate anyway. So you thinking is like you shouting into the universe, and they're like, oh, whoa, that guy's having a bad day. But aren't there millions and millions of citizens on Earth, if you multiply it back in time, for everyone who's passed on, who also had these mindsets, we are screaming for them to come. I think most of you know, and probably most of you would be exactly like me, if one landed in the backyard, and they somehow were able to mute everyone else's mind in the neighborhood. They're like, only you know we're here. Only you can see us. Only you can communicate with us. You know, they would have an amazing conversation with me. They would have an amazing conversation with you. If they said, please don't tell anybody, you'd be able to keep a secret, at least for a while. And so they could get to the next level with mankind without going through some government apparatus. But then we've got sort of the other half. Like, if you read Whitley Strieber's books about the subject, he portrays the aliens as being very, very reptilian-brained, very R-factor-brained, meaning there's no emotion in them. They are simply here to do a scientific thing. If they want to probe you, they will. If they want to kill you, they will. Steal your babies, they will. Blah, 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 blah. And of course, Whitley Strieber says that he's impregnated tons of aliens, and boy, his lineage is going to live out there in the universe. All right. Maybe. But what about the aircraft that was came up to my buddy's dad and was toying with him? Does that seem like the same mindset? It doesn't. So it immediately suggests that if there's, I mean, Whitley Strieber's a fictional writer. I think he was playing everybody. If there's any truth to his alien experiences, I would say maybe he's had one experience that he believes to be real. And just like a lot of folks in over time, they can't let go of the fame in their own brain. It's not about being famous in the world, but it's the same anxiety that a musician goes through when they suddenly realize the genre of music that they create is going to go on a 30-year hiatus until the all-star tours start occurring. So they want to keep it going. They want to analyze it. So if there is truly a more R-factor, myopic brain, and there is a like a crazy, what was it, the aliens in Life of Brian? There was a point where he falls into a spaceship and flies around. So those aliens exist too. They're out there gaming around with our pilots. So there'd be at least two species of consciousness. The one that was supposedly talking to the gentleman from Roswell, it was a very sympathetic, empathetic being. Very human, very emotional. And again, that guy was interviewed in the desert. They have chopped up his interview online. When I did my Roswell episode, I made sure and put all the videos in there in the description that I used to make the video, and I went back to audit them. 6 out of 10 were gone. Channels erased. Why? Why erase the channel? The videos I saw on those channels were eyewitness accounts or first person or first degree relatives of those that were involved, because the people involved had, in most cases, passed on. But the dude in the desert, you know, I've said it a couple times on shows, he got very glassy-eyed, man. This dude was 75 years old, I think. But he was talking about what the alien was telling him, and you could just see in his eyes, he was feeling it again. The dude only wrote one book, I think in the late 70s. So by the time this interview had occurred, he was well past any major publication of the book. Not meaning he wasn't going to make a bunch of money. But I mean, he should have been an Oscar Award actor if he was faking it, because he was pulling the best performance I've seen from any of the best thespians that have lived in my lifetime. I don't think he was acting. I think it's interesting that we have this knowledge of UFO sightings from tons of military people, you know, the ones in England, the ones here in the United States, ones in South America. Again, I'm not familiar with Russian sightings. You have Bill Cooper, who said he saw, he goes, look, I might have been lied to by the government for the 20 years he was investigating these sorts of things. Because I know, regardless, the two vehicles that left the ocean next to the ship I was standing guard on were real. And then a few minutes later, two went down inside the ocean. And his perception, the one, two were leaving and two were replacing. And a bunch of people on deck saw it, the radar room and the ship saw it. He was pulled inside. Black suits arrive about 12 hours later. They're all sworn to secrecy. He's upgraded to Q clearance, yanked out of, I guess, private first class kind of duty, and he was pulled in to work in the project that investigates such things. But now, isn't it interesting that there are these subjects that are utterly profound? It's a little bit better than a savior like Jesus, where we don't have photographs, we only have the claim that it's true. With UFOs, we have tons and tons of photographs, tons of videos. Now, again, 98% of them could be completely fake, but even if we just have 2% of them being real, it's something else. If I was brought into one of these programs, for instance, and I was either with the HBO lady or I had the same experience, they're showing me a bunch of photographs. Now imagine my brain, I remember photographs, especially faces, almost autistically nauseating. And then I'm pushed out, I'm discommunicated, and so I'm just now a citizen again. And you and I are chilling out somewhere in front of a laptop, in front of a desktop computer. And I say, okay, now search on real alien photographs on Google. Go ahead. And you're like, okay, bing. And you have a big 27-inch monitor, and there's hundreds of photos in front of our face. And I say, keep scrolling, stop. And I point right at the screen. I say, that one's real. Or at least I was told that one was real. If it was real, and if you know I'm telling you the truth, and it all checks out, what kind of sensation are you going to have sitting in that chair realizing that your eyeballs have now seen a real alien? A real one. Its mouth, its nose, its ears, its shape of its head, its hands, everything. It's profound, isn't it? But now here's the thing. How is it? I mean, I know there's ufologists, there's MUFON, there's all kinds of amazing people out there championing this kind of stuff, especially that dude with that crazy hair, right? Why is it that the average public does not have the conversation a couple times a year? Why is it just folks like us that will talk to each other about it? It could be multiple factors, of course. If you, like me, have never seen a UFO with your eyes, then perhaps you're leery about getting on that ship because you're going to get cast out if it's all fake. So maybe you're protecting yourself. But what if it's one of these things where we were dropped off? And I've got an episode about being alien created. I forgot the name, but the website has an alien category on it. You can just click that and surf through it. But what if it's part of our genetic code to kind of let go of the conversation? It's like the episode I made called Threshold of Knowledge, I think, something like that. where I talk about maybe man is pre-programmed to literally fight thinking outside the box so that we don't start following something that would hurt us in the end. There's just a, you know, I'm going to mention this a couple times. At times when I think it applies, the story of Adam and Eve, I'm going to repeat myself on purpose here. The story of Adam and Eve is that the serpent is having this side conversation with Eve. And when I just reread the chapter a month ago, there was something I saw I didn't see before, and it was never emphasized to me by an elder, which is that the devil tells her, if you eat this apple, you will be able to see all that is hidden from you. And he wasn't lying. And so again, we have to, let's just say that's a fictional thing, but it's teaching us a bigger lesson, which is beware of the things that you explore, because you might explore yourself into your demise. You might explore yourself into an area of fear that you've never felt before. I mean, let's put together a fictional scenario just to parse mankind a little bit so that we can kind of acknowledge that we got some daredevils out there. Let's say, miraculously, one day in some area of the world, a sinkhole occurs. It's a football field across, it's perfectly round, and it goes down so far that it's black pretty quick. Now, some of us would come up to the edge and be like, oh my God, I hope I don't fall into that hole. I would hate to fall, you know, 10 minutes into just a void of nothing. I mean, it'd just be like awful. You're going to die when you hit the ground. Your whole life's over, and it's just, ooh, just weird, right? But there are some dudes that'd be like, if I could have a digital altimeter that could tell me how far I am off the ground by hitting, you know, a radar thing down the ground, it may register nothing for a really long time as you're falling, but eventually it's going to hit ground down there before you have to hit, and it's going to give you time to pull your parachute, and then you're going to land and see what's down there. Some dudes would take the risk that there's lava down there, and they'll jump, and they'll love every second of it. They're just like that, you know? That psychological spectrum cannot be lost on an alien race, in my opinion. And so they have a choice on this planet to go from super methodical right brain scientist to super methodical philosopher, creative right brain person. So I say left and right, excuse me. And they could contact anyone in between. I mean, they could have the conversation that they're trying to have. But we aren't having the conversation at our level. So think about it. You're usually good at what you practice, which is why bad habits are bad, right? You keep engaging in a bad habit, well, that's what you get good at. Drinking, doing drugs, whatever. Oversexing yourself. Put a little Duchovny. So if we don't evolve our brains by having an extensive conversation at this level, not just a show and tell story about someone who was involved in the government, who went through all these processes, like a typical MUFON presentation. It has value, but it seems to be, and I should qualify myself, I've probably seen less than a single percent of all the MUFON presentations, but I've watched probably about 6 or 7 hours of them, different little presentations. But if we don't try to get into the psychology of them, how can they get into us? Are we being held back from wanting to have the conversation? Is it one of these conversations that just so pushes us to the very limit of our intellectual thought because there are so many unknowns, we don't have any eyewitness scenarios, that we shut down? Again, think about the Deep Thoughts University being created. A full campus. Big wing, maybe 2/3 of the college is teaching sort of the empirical truths of the world, mathematics, chemistry, physics, as it pertains to calculations that can get things done. And then we have our supernatural area, we've got our alien area, and we really engage in more methodical discussions and somehow factored into an accredited class. I mean, I'll give an example where the perceivably impossible degree is created that then becomes a standard degree. When Steve Jobs was on that, I think it's that Charlie, I forget his last name. He did the wood table interviews, right, in Washington, D.C., I think. I forget his last name. He's not on the air anymore. But he did an interview when Toy Story was coming out, and he bragged during the interview that he has a guy with a PhD in 3D terrain generation, which should make you think about Jet Propulsion Laboratories. How do you get a degree in something that almost no one on Earth knows about? How do you have a group of peers, 10-year peers with all PhDs, to know that whether or not you're blowing smoke? You don't. The degree is invented at some point. So we could create degrees where we have a very regimented philosophical foundation where you must understand the human condition, you must understand the human psyche, maybe you have a bunch of psychology classes, maybe you even have medical classes you take, you have a space regiment, an aerospace regiment, whatever, so that you could piece all these things together and talk intelligently about an alien race making contact with humanity, but also just intelligently waxing about what their worlds might be like. Imagine us getting a radio frequency from some planet, like so many sci-fi shows, and they radio us the schematics of a ship that will take us to them and take us back home. They prove that we're all going to return back home, so no one freaks out. Not that there would be plenty of us lining up to go visit them permanently. Even if we die fairly soon after we get there, we get to lay eyes on a foreign planet. We get to lay eyes on a foreign city, on an alien race. I mean, it would be damn near worth sacrificing anything else you're going to squeeze out of this hole. So let's say that's all we get from them. And we don't even know if the radio waves are traveling instantaneously or not. You know, perhaps they'd have to give us a sub-ether wave band or something like that to communicate with them instantaneously. There's a lot of cutting-edge cosmologists which do believe that light rays travel instantaneously to us and are not hindered by the fabric of the universe slowing them down to the speed of light. So we have to come up with a playbook for our astronauts to go there, our researchers, our philosophers, whatever. And we have to sit there and go, well, maybe they're this way, maybe they're that way. Even if they're communicating with us, we'd have to track all the protocols, just like a Star Trek episode. You know, what is it? The funniest thing about Star Trek from 87 to 2005 was that they came up with all kinds of interesting races that had all kinds of interesting protocols of communication. One of them, I think, if I remember right, you're supposed to argue with them a lot. One of them was that they thought badly about females, and so the females weren't supposed to be a part of the negotiations or communications. And, of course, Star Trek was always progressive, and part of the maturation of their scripts was to teach the aliens that women are just as good as men, so chill out. Sometimes it would transform their race, sometimes it wouldn't. But we would need to do such a thing. Well, maybe there's areas of the government that do these sorts of think tanks. I'm sure they've done it. If they've never made contact, well, we can pretty much rest assured they would have just been told how this works. And of course, there are dozens and dozens of people who call up Coast to Coast AM and say they've actually gone there. But when they're asked what they see when they get there, they don't have an answer because it was all BS. The other thing that's very interesting and sort of in line with religion, is especially the Christian religion, is that For the amount of people per capita who believe in Christianity, who believe that Christ is going to come back in their lifetime, I would wager that it's a similar ratio for the per capita people who believe in UFOs, thinking that the UFO contact is going to occur in their lifetime. I remember watching a show in 97, and they asked that question at the end of a special with probably about at least six correspondents, or I shouldn't say correspondents, but guests on the show, and every single one of them thought, yes, I think we're right on the precipice of first contact and da-da-da. So just to finish up our thought here, we would have to approach anything with a discipline, right? You don't want to, it'd be hard to make a department that talked about ufology and making contact and trying to figure out who they are, what they want, preparing ourselves both as an individual and as a society, understand that Americans are going to interpret a UFO one way and Russia is going to do it a different way and China will do it a different way, et cetera, et cetera. So I think our discipline would have to start with going on a mission as a curriculum of students to say, okay, for the first couple years maybe, we're going to harvest every single sighting that has ever been fabled to exist, from the known hoaxers who have admitted they lied all the way up to the ones where it seems like no one can crack it. At that point, we start parsing. I mean, this is what Project Blue Book was supposedly doing, right? And we should FOIA request everything out of every government we can possibly get our hands on as well. But then go through this exercise that we've gone through in this episode, which is to parse behavior, external behavior, versus the psychological profile of an alien that would do that behavior. Meaning, if a spacecraft flew around missiles, well, they have an objective to disarm missiles, which means they have some sort of higher intelligence that understands that a weapon of this nature, a nuclear weapon, is a bad idea. And they're trying to save humanity if that really occurred. Then you have the one that's toying with my friend's dad. I don't know. What is that? It's like straight out of Heavy Metal, the movie, right? And so we'd parse them all. And then after we figured out how many categories of things that we have, we could start doing some decent research. The other one is to figure out the background of the contributors of the stories themselves. And so with Project Disclosure, for instance, we have hundreds of interviews. I don't know if they even have 100, but I mean, it's a lot, where people said they were involved. Now, a lot of these interviews, as far as I'm concerned, 95% of them, the second the individual starts talking about the alien encounter, they're touching their nose, they're grabbing their earlobe, a bunch of nervous, weird behavior, which I interpret as an untruthful way of talking. I could be wrong. But I've talked to people that are talking about things that are very nerve-wracking, and they're disclosing something that they've never disclosed to another human being before because they feel comfortable with me. And I have never seen that behavior accompany their disclosure. Only when a kid lies. The beautiful thing about children is you get to see the algorithm not work right away. You know, did you break that? Oh, no. You know, it's like you see that behavior. So we have to, you know, probably come up with an integrity check on the individual to see if their story works out. Does the rest of their life work out? What agencies are you a part of now? What agencies have you been part of in the past? Because disinformation would be something that would come up. If there was strength, if there was a perceived strength of the United States of America as a country, way inside the military-industrial complex, way inside these black ops, or I shouldn't even say black ops, but these Q-clearance level, you know, S-4, fabled S-4, Area 51, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and blah, 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 other places. If they have conjured this up to make Russia nervous, China nervous, Europe nervous, by feeding the story that's not true, we need to determine that so we can decipher things. We also need to be careful about telling the people about their report. You know, we think you're a liar. We wouldn't want to say that because, you know, they just go to the next level, waste our time. But anyway, I hope you found this sort of thinking interesting. It's a way of talking about UFOs again, but really getting into some nitty-gritty because, again, we have to absorb the official narrative of any story. Because what other option do we have unless we're eyewitnesses ourselves? I've asked several times, and I think it's interesting. I think there's only been a couple people in 5 years that have ever admitted thinking they may have seen one. But if you have family stories where people that you utterly believe, whether they be your grandmother or your grandfather was a pilot or whatever, you personally, if you've ever seen a UFO or an alien, please share that, because we could sort of do this involuntarily until we get our university one day. Anyway, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, I finally skinned it with a theme I kind of like. I'm toying with it. Always keep my eyes open. It's kind of flashy looking. So get over there if you haven't. Again, if the show ever gets moved around because of censorship, you're going to want to have deepthoughtsradio.com bookmarked, because you'll always be able to find the show. I did join brandnewtube.com. And I just want to mention this for those who, I've got it mentioned in the other bumper as well. I uploaded 150 videos through their import feature, which is awesome. They actually let me paste in a YouTube video and they drag all the information over for me, and it's ready, lickety split. So they've told me that I've run out of my free allocation of videos, and they say that upgrade to pro, you click it and it's a 404 error. So I don't know what's going on over there. I tried uploading a video. Oh my God. It was like 300K per second. It was going to take a day to upload a 2 gig video, which is so sad. That's only 1080p. So I'm definitely trying there. Again, Parler is back up and running. It seems to have eased off a little bit of its authentication process. I ran into a friend of mine the other day and I was talking about Parler, and he was like, yeah, man, but the login's horrible. And I said, yeah, but they fixed a little bit. So we are jumping around. So there's two video up there that are reliable, YouTube and BitChute. Brighteon, still playing that game of having to be popular to put the truth up there, because they're all about us, right? I think Brighteon is either a poorly run organization or another shilly organization. I'm going to say that until they release their death clamp on us. They're claiming server issues and all this other stuff, but everyone else on the first day can take 150 videos. Give me a break, right? We have all the podcasting you could ever want. We have two social media that we still hang on to. Actually, three, I guess. Facebook, Minds.com, and Parler. We have an all-new remastered season one, and that's just because the old cuts of them were bad. But I will tell you this. If you listen to season one and podcast on the website, which you'll probably have to download the episodes manually because most podcast readers only go back 300 episodes. So you can't get your podcast reader to go back to the first episode just by touching one of the feeds. My site hosts all of them, I think. But you can listen to the original music that was on the front of these episodes, which is really, really cool. Plus, the censored episodes are on BitChute, so you can get to them on the website, which is really cool. Couple ways to donate to the show. Not a lot of newcomers in that area, because I know finances are just strange under this issue that we're dealing with in 2020, so completely understand. But just know, you guys made it happen this year, so I super duper appreciate it. And there's a store. So anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.